It's Friday, February 19th. Texas is warming up, but it's still no Cancun. We start here. As some lights slowly turn back on, many Texans who are no longer scared are angry.
Yesterday, Senator Ted Cruz flew to Cancun. How do you feel about that?
He can stay there.
People still aren't out of the woods yet. We'll recap the damage done to people's lives and to political careers. The data points look great, but they're only a trimester old.
There are a lot of pregnant women around, and they want answers.
Now, a drug maker will test its COVID vaccine on pregnant women. What you need to know. And do you get an A for effort if you're still guaranteed to fail?
Give us something versus nothing, which is where we've been with immigration reform.
The winding path forward for a sweeping Democratic immigration bill. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. We think of bureaucracy as really boring, slow, static, uninteresting, and yet some of this nation's biggest emergencies are not the result of war or unforeseeable events. When levees broke in New Orleans, or when the tap water started flowing from the Flint River, in many ways, those are stories about bureaucracies that led to full-blown deadly emergencies.
Guys, so this is my house.
This has been a very long week for the millions suffering in Texas, and tonight 13 million are still boiling their water.
In Texas this week, after a failure of the electric grid, literally millions of people were stranded without power, without heat, without potable water. In the last 24 hours, that number has gone down significantly, but
it's all, everything's flooded.
The people who still have a charge on their phones have been telling us how truly dangerous this has become. So how bad is it for the people we're not hearing from? How big and bad is the scope of this catastrophe going to be? Let's go to ABC's Marcus Moore, who's based in Dallas. He's been there, of course, through all of this. Marcus, I get that people are cold and literally in the dark. Is there a sense of how many people are losing, though, like their homes, their health, their lives at this point?
You know, Brad, right now, it's hard to know the scale of this catastrophe at this point, because it's really still unfolding.
Were you guys just wrapped in every blanket you own?
Oh, you know, sleeping in your clothes for 2 days.
We actually have a tent, so we heard on like Facebook that you can get into a tent and get all those covers in, and so that's what we're trying to do to keep warm.
We've heard so much about the power outages, yes.
I got the truck running, I got a power inverter.
And the rolling blackouts.
Show you my reality here at the grocery store.
And many people, without any clear knowledge of, you know, what they're going to eat. But then compound all of that, Brad, with like,
they turned our electricity on, they turned our water off.
The idea of not having clean water.
And as soon as we get to the stairwell, we hear it. We can hear it pouring down.
The water mains, those pipes that deliver water to all of the homes and the businesses, they ruptured.
So the ceiling came down. We have to replace the wall from the garage to the house.
Also, the water treatment facilities, some of them went down because they froze over. The equipment froze.
Before the snow started to melt, they were going outside, physically picking up the snow and taking it to boil it in order to use.
If you've been lucky so far and your pipes have not burst, we would encourage each of you to very strongly consider turning off the water to your house and draining the pipes for the night.
I mean, there's been a boil water notice for 13 million Texans. I mean, there were hundreds of water main breaks in Fort Worth and Dallas alone. And I know you've done a lot of reporting on the power grid. But now we're seeing how this one storm exposed the vulnerabilities of the entire infrastructure.
Well, and I was going to say, are we learning any more about how this happened in real time, Marcus? Because I'm blown away when I hear Texas authorities say, actually, maybe this could have even somehow been worse.
Mm. You want to know something really scary, Brad?
How close was the Texas grid to these catastrophic blackouts that you have been talking about?
Well, we heard from ERCOT, the agency that operates that manages the grid for most of the state, 90% of the power grid.
Our frequency went to a level that if our operators had not acted very rapidly to change the situation and arrest it, it could have very quickly changed. And
they said that we came within seconds, minutes of the entire power grid failing.
One of the reasons that operators have to act to arrest the frequency is if they say, well, you know, let's wait another minute and see what happens. What happens in that next minute might be three big units come off and then you're sunk.
If they had not implemented those rolling blackouts or the managed blackouts, if they had not done those things when they did them, I mean, we're talking about equipment catching on fire or failing in some way, one way or another, like physically failing. And then it would be, I mean, an absolute catastrophe because they wouldn't know how long it would take to repair all of that. And then also the entire system would be out.
We have already begun the process to make sure that events like this never again happen in Texas. And that starts with reforming the agency in charge of electric reliability in Texas, which is ERCOT.
Thankfully, that didn't happen, but my goodness, to learn that we were that close, that came as a real shock and is, you know, obviously very scary for people.
Well, and so the question I got to imagine, Marcus, is who gets held responsible?
Senator Ted Cruz made time for a family vacation in the middle of our state's historic winter storm.
Because, like, yesterday we had this bizarre scene where Senator Ted Cruz went to Cancun with his family. People spot him on the plane there. They get upset because he's leaving while people are literally dying in his home state.
I was trying to be a dad, and all of us have made decisions. When you've got two girls who have been cold for two days and haven't had heat or power, and they're saying, hey, look, we don't have school. Why don't we go? Let's get out of here. I think there are a lot of parents that'd be like, all right, let me, if I can do this, great. That's what I wanted to do.
A source now tells ABC News that Cruz actually rebooked his ticket as the scandal was breaking so that he could get back more quickly. You know, we had reporters with him there at the airport.
It was obviously a mistake, and in hindsight, I wouldn't have done it.
How are Texans feeling about their elected leaders right now?
In terms of Senator Cruz and that issue, there are people on either side. Obviously, people were very shocked and upset.
It appears that yesterday Senator Ted Cruz flew to Cancun. How do you feel about that?
He can stay there, actually.
Yeah? You don't need him back?
We don't need him back in Houston or in the U.S. Senate, no.
Good for him. Lucky him. Wish I was there.
But then there are others who support him, and they don't see what the big deal is. It's not like he runs the agency that's right. In charge of ERCOT. So
his job is to do federal policy.
His job is to do federal policy, and people have said, well, he could have been here helping to, you know, network and ensuring that people are getting the answers that they want and desperately need. But overall, more broadly,
I mean, we're just trying to stay alive. It's kind of ridiculous. I don't understand.
I don't get a sense that people are necessarily pointing the finger at any particular person or agency. But one thing is clear, Brad. People want accountability and they want to know why.
I know Texas is not prepared for this, but I think maybe they should be a little more prepared.
Why did this even happen, you know, to begin with? And then when you consider the history.
Sunny days ahead, right? Super Bowl 45 coming up on Sunday. Wait a second here. Look at this. Nothing but ice. Like an inch and a half thick down here. The entire bowl.
After 2011, the Public Utility Commission recommended updating, winterizing these power plants, but it was not mandated. The reason why.
The fact that this, a similar incident, unfolded back in 2011, it begs the question. Well, why wasn't something done after that?
All right, Marcus Moore there in Dallas. Stay safe, Marcus. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad. Always good to talk to you.
A couple days ago, a waitress in Brooklyn said she had been fired because she had declined to get the COVID-19 vaccine. And there are still question marks over whether it's legal to fire someone over these vaccines, considering they're not fully approved by the FDA. We are still in emergency use authorization land here, and different states have different rules. But when asked why she had refused to get vaccinated in the first place, she said specifically, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I believe in vaccines. I'm glad people are getting them. But I'm still not fully clear on whether a vaccine will affect my ability to conceive a child. And when you think about it, this pandemic is barely a year old. These vaccine trials lasted for months. It's easy to find yourself wondering how much we know about the risks to a nine-month pregnancy.
Pregnant women are encouraged to discuss a vaccine with their doctors. So far, about 20,000 pregnant women have received a vaccine without complications.
Well, yesterday, Pfizer announced it is doing a clinical trial specifically to see how its vaccine impacts women and their pregnancies. In the meantime, we got a doctor here who can describe what we know so far. Dr. Simone Wilds is an infectious disease specialist with South Shore Health in Massachusetts. Dr. Wilds, I mean, is this something you hear from patients? Are you hearing these concerns?
Absolutely. I get questions every single day, multiple times a day from nurses that are pregnant and those that are not pregnant, because they're not only concerned about pregnancy, but they're also concerned about fertility risks taking the vaccines.
I mean, it is striking to hear you say that nurses are asking you this. Like, if healthcare professionals are asking, I would assume it's a legitimate concern.
Yes. And we have had lengthy discussions about this because they really want to know if in the future, when they decide to have children, will the vaccine harm them and in any way affect this unborn child that they hope to have someday?
What do you tell them?
I tell them, at this time, absolutely, I would go ahead and get the vaccine. Based on the information that we have, we do know that COVID vaccine is not a live vaccine, meaning you're not getting a part of a virus into your body that's going to trigger some immune reaction. This is a man-made molecule.
Both vaccines require two doses and use groundbreaking technology, messenger RNA that gives your body instructions to produce a portion of the virus, its critical spike protein that triggers an immune response, creating antibodies to fight off the virus.
There's some vaccines that we absolutely don't recommend for you to get during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then there's some that they're really safe that you can get. So an example, flu vaccine, right? We tell everyone, pregnant or not, to get the flu vaccine. So there are certain vaccines, for instance, the yellow fever vaccine, which would say, don't get that vaccine during pregnancy.
Approximately 20,000 pregnant women have been vaccinated with no red flags, as we say. And this is being monitored by the CDC and the FDA.
Granted, we don't have a lot of data, but based on preliminary information we have, we don't see any effects right now. So it is safe to get the vaccine. And remember, the risk and the benefits way outweigh everything. And at this time, with all the cases of COVID that we're seeing and all the long-term effects from COVID, it's in your best interest to get the vaccine.
Okay, gotcha. So a flu vaccine, that's not a live vaccine. You're not giving a fetus like a little bit of the flu. Same with this. You're not giving them COVID, so it's seen as less of a risk. That's pregnancy. Is there an issue with conceiving at all? Like, that's what this waitress was concerned about. Will I be able to have kids down the line?
So I tell individuals, you know, people got COVID before the vaccine, got pregnant, and they were able to have children without any kind of complications or problems. So it is really not something that I think is going to change. I think as we get more data from the current vaccines, we're going to be able to assess fertility. But so far, there has not been any major red flags, not only from those who have gotten the vaccine, who were in the clinical trials.
Interestingly, many of the pregnant women were healthcare providers who were exposed to COVID, to SARS-CoV-2, and said, I would rather take my chances with a vaccine than getting infected while I'm pregnant because of the adverse effect and adverse outcome on pregnancy.
But just from individuals who got pregnant in the last 9 months and have delivered and the baby and doing fine. So I don't think I'd use that as like the gauge to say, you know, your fertility is going to be affected.
Vaccine trials are full steam ahead. Pfizer announcing it's testing its vaccine on 4,000 pregnant women around the world.
Do you know what happens next with a clinical trial like this with Pfizer? What are they looking for and how does it work?
For one, I have to tell you, I'm really excited that they are doing a clinical trial because there are a lot of pregnant women around and they want answers. And I think having hardcore data will really help to reassure a lot of individuals. And so I think what Pfizer's doing, having this study, not only here in the U.S., but across the world, you know, it's in Europe, it's in South America, getting a very diverse group, looking at pregnant women, what happens to them if they get the vaccine or placebo, will answer a lot of questions and I think will be very reassuring to individuals moving forward to get the vaccine when it's their turn.
But how long does that take? Because if we're talking about 9-month pregnancies and we're talking about a pandemic that is killing people so quickly, how long do you actually do the trial?
Oh, so I have to tell you, it will not be a 9-month trial for sure. What they are doing, they're going to assess these pregnant women in the last trimester, the third trimester, when they know that there's not going to be a lot of risk to the unborn child. Normally, it's lower risk. And so that is the time that they usually do a lot of trials if they're going to involve pregnant women.
So that's a thing that happens in other trials. Like, this is not the first time they're doing a vaccine trial with lots of pregnant women.
Right, right. I mean, it's not the norm, right? Again, you don't want to put pregnant women in trials to create any kind of harm, not only to the mother, but to the unborn fetus. You want to do it later when the risk that we know are usually lower. So this trial is going to be for women more than 18 years old and in the third trimester, 24 to 34 weeks.
Getting the infection during pregnancy actually causes greater consequences. The severity of the disease is higher. There's a higher chance of hospitalization and even dying if you get the infection during pregnancy. So really, it's an important discussion to have to assess the risk profile of every patient, what their risk is of getting COVID-19.
Of course, COVID is going to be with us for a while. So it's really important to get everyone vaccinated and getting them good information so they can make informed decision, because we want everyone to be healthy and well moving forward.
All right, really helpful information here. Dr. Simone Wild, infectious disease doctor at South Shore Health in Massachusetts. Thanks so much, doctor.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Next up on Start Here, Democrats were already jamming one big bill through the Senate, and they might just be getting started. The dream continues after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you.
We saw what happened with a sweeping COVID relief bill. President Biden proposed it. Republicans said, wait a minute, let's talk about some of these provisions we don't like. And Democrats said, we don't have a minute. If you're not going to do an urgent negotiation with us, we're just going to push this through as a budget measure. Well, yesterday morning, a couple days after we heard stories about migrants literally freezing at the border, the White House unveiled a sweeping immigration bill. This time, it looks like they would need Republican support. Or will they? Let's go to ABC's chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega. Cecilia, I mean, first of all, what's in this bill?
Oh, well, where do I start? It's sweeping and would be potentially revolutionary if it passed.
We Democrats are putting forward President Biden's vision for immigration reform because we believe it is the right vision for immigration reform.
This would create an eight-year path to citizenship. We're talking about for the 11 million undocumented immigrants that live in this country, people like Dreamers.
The thought of losing my loved ones and of being removed from the only country I know, the country I love and call home, is absolutely terrifying.
Those undocumented young people who were brought to the country illegally as children, farm workers, people who qualify for temporary protected status. Those are immigrants who are especially vulnerable coming from places like war zones.
Who are out there in the fields risking their lives, risking the contagion of COVID so we can go to the supermarket and get fruit and vegetables.
They would basically get bumped to the front of the line. They would get green cards immediately if they can pass background checks. And I should say that this basically only applies to folks who have been in the country prior to January 1st, 2021. Mm. Anybody who came after that would not qualify for this.
And when we talk about the so-called Dreamers, Cecilia, it's all just been executive orders so far. You can kind of turn on, turn off as a new president comes to town. This would essentially make that rule permanent.
Yeah, this would make it permanent. And there is a lot of support for that. The Dreamers, universally and overwhelmingly, public opinion polls have shown that the American public, the American electorate, wants to keep them in this country, wants them protected. Even President Trump said he wanted to do right by the Dreamers.
If they do a great job, I think it's a nice thing to have the incentive of, after a period of years, being able to become a citizen.
Yet here we are, all these years later, and these young people are still living in immigration limbo, basically.
You do want a pathway to citizenship,
yes,
for roughly 11 million undocumented immigrants,
yes,
and that would be essential in any bill for you.
Well, yes.
Well, so like, OK, so if you're the Biden administration, congratulations. You wrote a huge bill. Fantastic. But like, did I miss something, Cecilia? Are Republicans about to sign on to big Democratic pieces of legislation? Like, does this stand any chance of passing?
You've missed nothing, Brad. As it stands right now, this is essentially a non-starter.
There will always be those who stand against immigrants, believing reform is somehow a political loss to Republicans and not a win for the United States of America.
Republicans want border security. There's a lot in this bill they do not like. We haven't even really heard from many moderate Republicans who say they would be on board with this entire package as a whole. The Democrats are going to have to figure out whether they want to split this up into smaller pieces and potentially try to pass smaller chunks of the legislation, say protections for Dreamers, along with some border security, or border security and moving asylum seekers towards the front of the line, helping them get visas earlier.
If you had a refugee bill by itself, I'm not suggesting that, but there's things that I would deal by itself, but not at the expense of saying I'm never going to do the other.
But this all one fell swoop giant umbrella of immigration at this point has no chance of passing with Republican support. However, the Democrats could decide that they want to go at this alone. And if they do that, they basically would have to sell immigration in the Senate as a budgetary bill.
Right.
And if they do that, the likelihood that it gets watered down in a much narrower form is probably what would happen. And then you're potentially losing progressive support. So they're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't right now.
Well, and can I just go back really quickly to the idea of breaking this bill? Because that always sounds good, I think, to the average American. Like, well, let's just vote on these little chunks. And if they pass, they pass. If they don't, they don't. Are there, like, what are the pros and cons in lawmakers' minds to breaking this up into a bunch of small bills?
Well, it's basically one big pro. It could be that they end up getting some Republican support.
It's going to take a compromise
on this issue for us to get something done and to protect the Dreamer population, which is certainly a goal of mine.
Legislation to protect Dreamers does have a lot of support. They would probably get the 10 Republican votes that they need to protect these Dreamers.
We have to recognize that we, as a nation, will honor the commitment made by our prior president.
So however, Republicans are going to want something in return, and that's probably going to have to come in the form of some sort of border security.
Here, one of the key components of the bill is investing in smart security up at our ports of entry and doing it in a way that's actually effective.
So if they broke that out and say, prioritize, let's just protect Dreamers, that's one route they could end up going. And a lot of the advocacy groups say, hey, we really appreciate this idea of a giant immigration reform package, but we also need to protect these Dreamers. We need some reality checks here, something realistic. Give us something versus nothing, which is where we've been with immigration reform attempts on Congress all these years.
Right, by the time you're bringing in everything that everyone wants that would make this palatable to them, by then you're talking like about a huge bill like this that has just not gone anywhere in the past. Cecilia Vega, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
As we continue to mark Black History Month, one topic that has been raised over and over in the last year is, what about the history? Like, history class, how does our understanding of American history itself shape our present? We've got another piece of analysis this morning, an audio essay to share with you. Here's ABC News correspondent Zachary Quiche to bring home the week.
And one last thing. It was the mid-90s on a weeknight in the computer room of an old middle school. The sign-up sheet was filling up, a hodgepodge of characters pulled up to old computers to do something most couldn't do at home, community access to surf the net. A young man sat down and entered his first official internet search. The Black Panthers.
It's now common knowledge that our welfare system has itself become a poverty trap, a creator and reinforcer of dependency.
One of the great tragedies of the American experiment is the big lie. Who and what African Americans are and how they are perceived in this country, it's been well orchestrated.
Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy.
The notion that Black folks are lazy, violent, and not smart exists because it perpetuates the lie, a mistelling of history. While the world waits for a vaccine to unshackle us from the grips of a global pandemic, we might thank Black imagination. In her new book, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents, author Isabel Wilkerson gives us a history lesson. In the 1700s, West Africans had discovered how to use infected fluids to inoculate themselves from disease. When a slave begged a Massachusetts doctor to try it, dozens of lives were saved. Within decades, vaccinations were becoming widespread. Textbooks do not include that slave's name. We didn't learn that in school.
This is offensive and outrageous to Americans of every ethnicity.
What it really is about is it's about this referendum on the 1619 Project, because they're all up in a bunch over it.
American history has been centered around white male achievement in their humanity.
Parents at Maria Montessori Academy in North Ogden were sent an email informing them that they would have the option to opt their child out of Black History Month lessons and events that were planned throughout the month of February.
When parents in a Utah school district fought to make Black history an elective course, not required, it was a call from an old playbook.
My name is Fountain Hughes. My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson.
My grandmother was a house servant.
My ancestors were at Monticello as slaves.
In fact, when historians added slave quarters to Thomas Jefferson's old plantation at Monticello, white people threw up their arms.
People come to Monticello and they really want to know, was Thomas Jefferson a good slave owner?
It was an inconvenient truth they'd rather not know.
Though the question comes from a place of really wanting to understand, it's impossible to be a good slave owner.
And Dr. Gladys West, a female mathematician born in 1930, contributed what we now know as GPS. She helped map the globe. What I'm saying is, the next time you use your phone to get from point A to point B, thank a Black woman. When we talk about MLK in our schools, why don't we talk about the FBI?
The Black Panthers are the single greatest threat to our national security, more than the Chinese, even more than the Russians. Our counterintelligence program must prevent the rise of a Black Messiah from among their midst.
In the film Judas and the Black Messiah, a more complete truth emerges about the Black Panthers and a charismatic young leader, Fred Hampton. the FBI considered the Panthers the equivalent of the Klan, a terrorist organization.
Go to the federal bill and have a demonstration that's to educate, a demonstration that it is disciplined and organized, you know.
But we aren't taught about the free breakfast program that fed thousands of children in free health clinics, or the Rainbow Coalition that Hampton developed by acknowledging the needs of not only black folks, but the down-and-out white community.
With help from an FBI informant, Chicago police raided the apartment on the city's west side.
The United States government killed Fred Hampton.
Sergeant Gross described the raid as 15 minutes of hell and a miracle. A miracle because not one policeman was killed. A miracle because not more policemen were shot.
If journalism can be seen as truth and advocacy of the truth, it's why black journalists are so important. That kid at the computer was me. But this experience is not mine to own. It is the black American experience. The whole story has never been told. That's black history.
So valuable to have these lines drawn straight from the past to the present. Thank you to Zachary Keesh, who used to sit in the cubicle right next to me before the world all flipped upside down. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Lewis Millman, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimbel, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, Abe Velez, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Jim Ryan, Chris Berry, Cheyenne Hazlett, Stephanie Ebbs, Lindsay Griswold, and my own dad, who's an earthquake expert who fact-checked me on everything happening in Japan. Our dinner table conversations growing up are totally lit. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.